And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. In this hour, we've got Lloyd Pye with us. Lloyd, this is an incredible story about these researchers unearthing a hominid that they say is more ancient than Lucy. What's the significance of it, Lloyd?
Well, what they're saying, George, is that it tells us more about the supposed common ancestor of humans and chimpanzees, or humans and apes, than any other prehuman that has come to light so far. And basically what that means is they contend that somewhere between, say, 6 and 9 million years ago, there was a common ancestor creature from which we descended and chimps descended and gorillas descended. And that somehow there was a split off. We split off of it, and they went on to become what they became, and we became what we became. But that original, that common ancestor, was fundamentally different than both of us. So what they're saying is that this creature, Ardipithecus ramidus, at 4.4 million years ago, has traits of both chimps and gorillas and humans. And so they're saying that it's probably on the line back to that common ancestor about 8 million years ago. This is what they say.
Lloyd, you know, for those of us who believe that, you know, we were either seeded or, you know, divine intervention created us, as opposed to evolution, does this discovery do anything to that?
Well, yeah, it really does, because I think all of these things, George, all as they move farther back in time and they find creatures that look to be walking upright, which this one seems to be, it strengthens the case, I think, that humans are not part of the natural flow of life on Earth, the flow chart of primates at least, because you keep finding upright walking creatures the farther back they go. Now, one of the things in this case that they haven't mentioned at all is that there is a distinct and very much similar relative to the Ardipithecus creature that I've read all the stories that have been out there, and I have yet to see the word Oreopithecus mentioned. Oreopithecus, its nickname is the Cookie Monster, and it's unique in the field because it's right at 8 million years ago when they say the common ancestor was. It has an opposed big toe like the Ardipithecus does, and it was walking upright, as they say the Ardipithecus was. So instead of looking forward toward us, toward humans, with this Ardipithecus, why don't they look back to look to see, is there anything that this thing might have descended from? And there stands Oreopithecus on that tripod-type foot that this thing has. So it to me, in my view, it makes it more and more likely, and there's more we could talk about, but there are going to be more and more upright walking creatures coming out of the Miocene era, which extends from 20 million years ago to around 5 million years ago.
How many of these creatures do you think might have been roaming the planet at that time?
Well, we know that there were literally dozens and dozens of Miocene apes, because apes dominated in that period that I just said, from 20 million to 5 million years ago. You think it was monkeys. You think monkeys, because monkeys dominate now, you think that monkeys dominated then, but it's not true. There were more apes at that time. So there were plenty of them, and there was plenty of room to develop and for there to be upright walking primates. And there were. They just don't talk about it very much, like Oreopithecus isn't talked about very much, but all you have to do is look it up, and there it is. Look up Moeratopithecus at 20 million years ago, and you've got something that has all the signs of upright walking 20 million years ago. Well, they don't talk about that because it leads to the idea of Bigfoot. I know you have a Bigfoot show coming up, and people should tune into that, because the truth of the situation is that if the hominoids, Bigfoot, Yeti, the abominable snowman, Sasquatch, and there are other kinds around the world, the Sedapas, the Agagwis, the Almas, if all of those are real, let's just go for a minute with the idea that those are real, which they are. I mean, there's so many reports. They have to be real. They're like UFOs and aliens. You can, you know, say what you want. There's just so many reports. There has to be some smoke there. So let's say they're real. If they are real, then they require upright walking ancestors all the way back in the fossil record for them to exist today. Those upright walkers have to be there, and they are there. What we are told are pre-humans, because science requires that we evolve, that Darwinian evolution be correct, because of the battle that they have with religion right now. Any ground they lose in that argument is a win for religion, and they know it, so they don't give any ground on any front, even when it's clear that they're wrong. And in this case, it's pretty clear that they're wrong, because if the hominoids are real, and if there are upright walkers all the way back, which there are, then it leaves humans off the flowchart. And that's really the truth of the matter. If you look at this creature, Ardipithecus, if you look at the drawings, anybody can go on the internet and look at how they look. They're just upright walking apes. I mean, they're upright walking apes as clear as anything. But so is Lucy. So is all of the early Homos, Homo habilis, Homo erectus, right through Neanderthal. Neanderthals look like apes. They have all of the physiological traits of apes, except they walk upright, and nobody denies that.
And let me ask you about Neanderthals for a moment,
sure.
Lloyd. Originally, scientists said that, of course, we evolved from them.
Right.
Now they're saying that the Neanderthals and human beings, Homo sapiens, existed at the same time, and then eventually they died off.
Right.
If that's the case, that really throws a juggernaut all over the place, doesn't it?
Right. It's clear they've got a real problem with Neanderthals, and I'll tell you what. In 2006, when they announced that they were going to recover the full genome of the Neanderthal using the 454 sequencing technology that we've talked about relative to the Star Child, but it's the same technology. They've been working on that, and they said they were going to have it in 2 years. They've been now, it'll be 3 years. It was 3 years in July. There's still no result here. Now, why do you think? I think personally that the answer's there. The problem is they can't explain it, and the reason probably is it's going to be much closer to chimps than to humans. They were expecting that the Neanderthal would be genetically very much closer to humans, and that would prove that we evolved from Neanderthals. When it's clear, if you look at them physiologically, there's no time to evolve. You have Neanderthals, and then suddenly, overnight, boom, and an explosion, you have Cro-Magnons looking 180 degrees different in every point that matters in the cranium and the body. It's just a different creature, Cro-Magnons. No evolution possible, and as you say, there's an overlap. Neanderthals appear at about 300,000 years ago. The Cro-Magnons appear at about 200,000 years ago. So you've got almost 200,000 years of overlap until the Neanderthals go extinct at about 30,000 years ago. We didn't evolve from them, and their genes are going to be showing that very clearly, that we're not like them. So science is in a real bind now to try to find a way to explain human beings in a Darwinian progression of evolution.
That's the problem they make, Lloyd. They shouldn't have to look at it as a Darwinian progression. They should look at it either from, I think, divine intervention or ET intervention.
Exactly that. That's what they don't want to do. The one thing they don't want to have to do is acknowledge ET reality or acknowledge divine reality. Either way you want to look at it, that's bad news for science. So science is fighting the battle on two fronts. They have the creationists and the religious people pushing their agenda, and they have people like me and others who will be on your show pushing the intervention theory, the ET intervention. And I think personally, based on the research that I do, that the ET intervention is going to win, because you can see the results of the hands at work in our gene pool, in our chromosomes. You can see the fusion of the second and third chromosomes. You can see the inversions on other chromosomes. It's clear, you can look at the 4,000 genetic disorders that we have, that we shouldn't begin to have nearly that many, and we have them because we are a sloppy job. When they were putting us together, they were apparently going by the credo of better to have it fast than have it right. They didn't make us well. They made us fast, and so we're the result of that.
Do you ever take time and just watch people, the things they do, how they react? I do that a lot, Lloyd, and I also pick up a lot of material for the show by doing that. I'm convinced, I always have been, but I'm convinced that we were created. Some form, some fashion. This is not an accident. It's not a fluke. There's, I'm sure, science behind it. There's much more. There's deep consciousness. There's deep thought. This, we were developed. I have, you just watch human beings and the way they work and think. This is not an accident. I don't know why scientists don't realize that.
Well, they do. I believe they do, George.
Let me say, admit it.
Excuse me?
Or admit it. They don't admit
it. Yeah, they know, but they can't admit. It's a game. They're in this playing a game. They're on a side. They've got a jersey. They have their numbers. They have their team. And they are trying to win. And they're against serious, stiff competition, and they know it. So, I know, just to jump back from it, I've dealt with enough of them. When I show them the Star Child skull, don't think they don't know what that is. Do not think they don't know. I see their eyes bug out of their heads. I see their jaws drop open. They know exactly. I showed it to Stephen Jay Gould. I mean, it was when he was alive. There's nobody higher up the food chain than him. He absolutely knew what it was, and he just said, you ought to just forget that. You ought to just put that away and forget that. They know, but they also know very well that they can't give it any credence because anything they do to support me and what I'm doing, it's a loss for them. It's losing ground for them. Same thing with to acknowledge that something like Ardipithecus has an exact corollary 4 million years earlier at Oreopithecus at around 8 million years ago in the same general place of Africa and also in other places around the world, a very, very well-known and complete fossil where they have a lot of samples of it. And again, just look at the feet. It's the same feet. And you talk about what they say it walked upright on a foot that is like, four toes and then a big toe sticking off to the side. Now, can you imagine trying to run through high grass with a toe like that? Can you imagine? or just going through the jungle with roots and runners and things like that. It's going to be stubbing and pulling on things and breaking. And it's just, it's not a good design for an upright walking creature. It's just not.
We're going to come back and take phone calls with Lloyd Pye. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, Lloyd Pye. Your phone calls. Lloyd, before we go to the calls, how about a Star Child update?
Well, we're just still doing everything that we were doing before the last time we talked. The ebook is available. I've talked to a couple of people who are interested in maybe helping me connect with some money people, so we're hoping for that to come through. And I'll of course keep you informed if either of those come through. It's just talking, negotiating. It's a lot of money, and people want to know what they're getting for it, and no one can really believe that it's as lead pipe a cinch as I keep telling them that it is. So that's what the ebook is for, is to convince people, and they say they're going to read it. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, good job. And I've got to congratulate you, Lloyd, on just the perseverance, the pushing, the striving, the passion that you've had with this project over all these years. It really has consumed you, and you just keep plugging away.
Well, I thank you, George. I appreciate it, but I really have no choice. It's like I said last time, I'm representing millions of people who would give anything to be in my shoes, and I'm trying to do a good job that would be worthy of all of them. And also, I know I'm right. I know we're going to win this, and so in doing that, if I had any doubts, believe me, I would have given it up a long time ago, but I know what it is. I know we're going to win. We've got the tool out there now that we need, which is that test from 454. We have all the DNA we need. made. It's just a matter of putting the two together, the DNA with that procedure, and we make history as big as history can be made. So I think anybody would, you know, knowing what I know, I believe anybody would stick with it and see it through to the end.
To the phones we go, Morgantown, West Virginia, east of the Rockies. It's Kevin. Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling.
Hey, George Lloyd, great show. I can't believe I actually made it through.
Yes, you did.
What I wanted to ask Lloyd is, I was thinking from like watching the Discovery Channel that we had split off from Homo erectus like a million years ago, and we came from them, and then Neanderthal came from another branch. And didn't they find like an intermediate called, I think it was Homo heidelbergensis or something like that, that was an intermediate?
Exactly right. All of that is true. What happened is science was convinced that we had descended from Neanderthal as long as there was nothing to prove that we didn't. Then, as George pointed out, they began to find out that it couldn't be. There was the overlap. There were the genetic differences that came out in 1997. So it's been pretty clear for quite a while now that we couldn't possibly have really descended directly from Neanderthals. So all they could do then was look at the next one back, which was Homo erectus, and say, okay, well, if we didn't descend from Neanderthal, then we had to have descended from Homo erectus, and we split off in that same splitting thing, and Neanderthal became one branch and we became another branch, but Homo erectus was, you know, the beginning. And then they found another fossil that looked a little bit more human-like than did the Homo erectus Lake Turkana boy, and so they said, okay, well then we must have evolved from this guy instead. It's just this constant need that they have to establish the missing link. You hear it all the time. They have a new missing link every time we turn around. A few months ago, it was that little lemur, Ida, from 47 million years ago. A few years ago, it was the hobbit. Everybody remembers that, the missing link, the missing link, the missing link. And the problem is, they have no missing link. They've been looking for 150 years since Darwin produced his masterwork 150 years ago this year, and they've been looking for that missing link ever since. But Darwin himself, in his own book, Darwin closed his book out by saying, if this whole theory requires a lot of intermediate species, and if they can't be found, then clearly I'm wrong. Well, they haven't been found, but so science has to do this tremendously difficult dance around that very embarrassing fact. And so they keep saying, we found the missing link, we found the missing link, we found the missing link, so that the average person gets the impression that they actually have, when in fact, they're not even in the ballpark of it. So that's their problem. They can't prove their case, so they keep pretending that they're in the process of proving it when they really never are.
Lloyd, what's your take on the work of Zechariah Sitchin? You've looked at it. You've studied it over the years.
Oh, I've done a lot of research on it in part four of my book. Everything You Know Is Wrong is pretty much dedicated to condensing the best parts and the core of his book into something that is readily accessible to average people. You know, if you've read Zechariah's work, you know, you've got to cover that with a serious frame of mind. So what I tried to do in part four of Everything You Know Is Wrong is give people a Cliff Notes version of it, you know, the highlights boiled down. You know, basically what I did with the ebook of the Star Child, just give you a Cliff Notes, boil down, here is the essence of what you need to know about this if you want to get it in a tight package. And I think while he may be not exactly correct in everything that he says, I will guarantee you that in the scope of history, it's going to be shown that he was more right by far in what he says about human origins and how we all came to be here than any, and I mean absolutely any, mainstream scientist working today, all of those that, you know, put this theory down and call him a buffoon and all the things that you hear, he will go down as being much more right than any of them. I absolutely guarantee that.
And if you don't know about Zechariah Sitchin, he's in his 80s now, and his theory based on Sumerian texts and tablets that he's been looking at, and that's from a region in Iraq, was that a long, long time ago, another planet came by the solar system, and the Anunnaki, the inhabitants of that planet, came here looking for gold And they genetically altered us. They made us into the Adam and the Eve. And that's how it all started. It's fascinating.
You want to hear a really cool thing? A guy sent me a suggestion the other day, and I love this. I said, I'm going to steal this, but I'm going to, you know, give him credit. It's the idea of this. You know that apes have 48 chromosomes, 24 from the mother, 24 from the father. We stand alone from all other higher primates having 46 chromosomes, 23 from the mother, 23 from the father. And he said, Lloyd, did you ever notice that we have 24 ribs, 12 on each side? And in the Bible, God takes one of Adam's ribs to make Eve, and there we are with 23, 23. Isn't that cool? Isn't that a great way to symbolize that? I've never heard it put that way before. But I think, you know, it's just a great way to symbolize the reduction, for whatever reason, of the 48 chromosomes of the higher primates to the 46 that we have. And I've been saying for years that it has to be that the Anunnaki were creating a species of slave and servant that they could also procreate with, because they were isolated here. This was a hardship duty on Earth. And so they were making companions for themselves, and they were, you know, ultimately made fertile companions. And so the idea of they must have had the 46 chromosomes, and in order to get fertility, they had to create something with 46 chromosomes out of something that was starting with 48 chromosomes. And so there was a reduction by fusing the second and third chromosome together. All of this is verified in our genetics. And what a wonderful way to symbolize that reduction, but to look at the 24 ribs, you know, and take one away and make 23, and then you've got Eve. I love it. I think that's a great analogy, and whether it's true or not, it's just right on the money of what actually happened.
Let's go to Santa Clara, California. Lloyd Bruce is there, west of the Rockies. Bruce, you're on with Lloyd Pye.
Yes, sir. Question?
Sure.
First statement, then leading into a question. I long believe that what you gentlemen are talking about is the physical portion of the human. That is, partially, we could agree that the fact that the angels that they speak of could be alien. But the difference is that also, and I have brought this up previous show, that we have a soul. The time that God introduced the soul into the human being was when we became a human being. And it has been measured, and there's a weight to it. So as such, there basically is the difference. So you can have the physical sciences merging with the religion, and both can be correct. Comment?
Well, for me, it's a lot easier to stick with the science and to leave the metaphysics to other people because, you know, whether or not the soul is there, we have a soul, I think there's certainly more to life than just our flesh and our bones. I think that I prefer to put it in scientific terms like Rupert Sheldrake's morphic fields. There's something going on. It's like why fish, a thousand fish can all turn on a dime, or a thousand birds, you know, when you see them do those acrobatics in the sky. They're communicating in a way that is over and above the physical body. We all have our experiences where we just get that creepy feeling up our backs and the hair on the back of our neck rises and something dangerous is about to happen. There's more to it than just that. Putting it, calling it a soul, giving it a weight, doing things like that, I think might be reaching a little too far. There's more to it. Let's try to solve the physical aspects that we can solve, get that right, get on the same page there, and then open our minds to trying to prove as much as we can about the aspects that are paranormal. Let's just deal with the normal until we all get on the same page with that. And that's still going to take us a while, I'm afraid.
What do you think of Michael Cremo's theory that mankind is very, very old?
Well, Michael and I are good friends, and, mm-hmm. and we've talked about this before. There is, I think, overwhelming evidence that higher civilizations, higher intelligences have been on the earth for millions of years. But genetically, we, the living human beings that are here today, we only go back about 200,000 years when Cro-Magnons appeared. So given that, and that's clear in our genes as well, so given that, the beings that were here 5 million years ago, 6 million years ago, what Michael talks about, though human-like in what they leave behind, the uparts that they leave behind, were not humans. They are perhaps and quite possibly those that created us and turned the place over to us. But they somebody was here, and if they were, you know, like us, they were not us. They were human-like, but not humans.
Let's go to Orlando, Florida. First-time caller. Hey, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. I wanted to agree that the Darwinian evolution theory is pretty much falling apart week by week. But I'm kind of confused on why the speaker, Lloyd, sounds so sure about the date. Every scientific dating method that I've seen always has a guess by some scientist. They infuse a guess or an estimate in their dating methods, in their formulas.
Okay.
As far as dating specifically, you're right that the 200,000-year date is the middle of a bracket that's found by two ways. There's the mitochondrial DNA studies. I think everybody's aware of those. They've been known about since the middle 1980s, mitochondrial Eve and all that. And the mitochondrial DNA of human beings indicates that the first of us appear around 200,000 years ago. Ironically enough, what the Sumerians say in their tablets, according to the work of Zechariah Sitchin, who we talked about earlier, is that the Atamu were created, in fact, around 200,000 years ago. What a coincidence. And it's pretty clear in the work of paleontologists and anthropologists and archaeologists that Cro-Magnons also appear at about 200,000 years ago, and those are, of course, us, you know, human being-type creatures, a little bigger than us, a little stronger than us, but nonetheless us, different, you know, with our foreheads and our eye sockets, and they're us. So you've got three things right there, two of which we can, you know, consider scientific, the archaeological record and the genetic record, and then you have the writings of the Sumerians as well, which certain people reject, but I happen to accept, and, you know, there you go. So 200,000 years does seem to be it.
All right, Joe, thanks. Let's go to Shiloh, Illinois. James, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the program. Hey, James.
Hey, George. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Lloyd, you know, fascinating just listening to you. You know, you're one of the most, in my opinion, logistical speakers I've ever listened to as far as your knowledge goes and the way you put your words together. It's just amazing. I do have a question about the Star Child. I heard Bill Burns was talking on a show, and they were talking about the difference in the mitochondrial DNA and I guess the nuclear DNA.
Right.
And is there any further work on that as well? I wanted to ask you if the fibers that were found, if there's been any further work on that. And have you heard about these spheres that are a couple billion years old that were found that are made of some kind of anomalous metal? And I'll listen off the air.
Okay, that was a CREMO discovery, wasn't it?
Yeah, the spheres you'd need to talk to Michael about. But yes, I've seen them. I think everybody has. They're amazing, incredible stuff. So, yeah, that as far as the fibers, no, we haven't been able to do any work with those because they're really microscopic in size. And when we looked into the problem of having research done on them, we don't have any money. This is a shoestring operation all the way. And so what they said was you have to not only develop the you have to develop the testing protocols, the way to recover these things, since they've never been seen before. There are no tools in existence to recover them properly. And then you'd have to test them, and you'd have to run every test in the world on them because you don't know what they are. So it was just way too expensive. It can be done. It will be done. Once we prove what it is, they'll treat it. The Star Child like OTSI, and they'll do all of that will be found out, what the fibers are, what the residue is, everything about it will be known eventually, but not under my watch, because I just can't afford it. I'm struggling just to get the DNA test done that, you know, that we need. But and the first part of the question was, I think, you know, where was it, kind of like what yours was, George? I've kind of lost my track answering the last part of it. Can you remind me what the first part was?
Primarily, as he was talking about the difference of, and he is amazed, as he said, about the depth of what you've done and how you studied it. But as we're talking, I'm sorry.
Right, I certainly appreciate the compliment and all that. But there was some other thing that he had asked, and it slipped my mind.
The clock's going to get us in just a second or so.
All right.
Any conferences or any speaking engagements for you?
No, I'm trying to keep the schedule clear. I've talked to a couple of television shows that are interested in maybe doing what the UFO hunters did. So maybe that's going to come through. I'm just trying to leave it open because I'm expecting that we'll find the person. We keep beating the drum and letting people know, hey, we got this thing in the bag. All we need is the money to do the test. And eventually somebody's going to hear that message who has the ability to do something about it. And maybe I'll get on Larry King. Maybe Larry King will hear about it through the people that are on his show, or Ellen DeGeneres or Oprah. So somebody's going to hear and want to know more, and we'll be able to parlay that, I'm sure. I've got good confidence. We've got a very good product here. All it takes is just putting it into the right hands, and thank you for your help in letting us do that.
All right, that's Lloyd Pye.